play pretend with me for a moment. I want you to close your eyes and imagine the day has come. They've handed you a gold watch and throw a party with a cake. You pack up your desk and drive home. Tomorrow, you won't need to set your alarm clock. Welcome to retirement. I'm Jabalani LaFall, and on today's Central Standard, this retirement fantasy for some, nightmare for others, comes to life. We set a plan for what to do when you're 30 days out from your retirement and what to do today to make sure your lifestyle doesn't have to change later on in life. We'll be joined by our Cash Money crew of financial advisors today on Central Standard after this hour's news. Kansas City, according to a recent New York Times editorial on the state of retirement in America, basing an entire retirement system on people voluntarily saving for 40 years and evaluating the relevant information for sound investment choices is kind of like asking the family pet to dance on two legs. Now, you might be thinking, hey, my dog does a mean cha-cha, I don't have anything to worry about. But unfortunately, retirement planning isn't that fun or predictable or entertaining. This is Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. There are still options, plenty of retirement options in a world of economic flux, and thankfully, there's some people here to help you, and those people are...
It's time now for financial planning advice with the Cash Money Crew.
That's right. Our Cash Money clique of financial advisors is here. Gangster music and all, David Jackson of Waddell & Reed, Sandy Weaver, Financial Security Advisors, and Dan Matthews of Step & Rothwell. Let's get into this retirement thing, people. What's the state of retirement, David Jackson, in these uncertain times? Talk about some of the things that we're facing with this retirement environment. Two back-to-back recessions inside of a decade. Unemployment, pension fund, underfunding. Talk about it.
Well, it's a scary situation for a lot of people, and the biggest thing that people need to understand is that they're on their own. They really have to figure this stuff out on their own or with the help of a financial planner because, you know, you really – the days of, you know, you staying 30, 40 years with one company and you're getting the sweet pension and the gold watch, those days have gone. So, you know, you got to be making your own plans and, you know, following some serious rules.
Dan, talk about the changing nature of pensions themselves and 401k accounts, which according to some research just isn't going to be enough for most people. What are some of the other options? And then we'll go to Sandy and see what her take is on state of pensions and retirement.
Well, we had a show about this not that long ago called Retirement Planning in the New Normal. And that's exactly what's happening. Pension plans are being phased out. Companies are passing on more of the risk to the employees in terms of making sure that they make their own contributions and that they fund their own retirement versus the company having to do that. And that's even happening at the state levels or the state government levels too. So the options are that you first have to come up with a plan, and you have to come up with a plan that works, and you're going to have to save your own money out of your own paycheck in order to make this work, and you're going to have to do it early.
Any developments since that last show on retirement and the new normal? Anything different right now that we're looking at, Dan?
Not specifically that I can think of right now, but it's still kind of the same story, and that's that the obligation is on retirees or savers during those working years, and that it's not more and more of that obligation is passing on to them versus somebody else taking care of you.
Sandy Weaver, before we get your take on the retirement era, the retirement infrastructure, the retirement environment that we're going into right now, a little something from Diane Stafford, a recent story in the Kansas City Star, saying in 1991, just 1 in 10 workers told the Employee Benefit Research Institute that they planned to wait to retire until they were older than 65. By 2007, that was 3 in 10. Now it's about 40%, 4 in 10. Attitudes are changing. Baby boomers are a big demographic that's going into retirement. What's the environment?
For a lot of those 40% upwards who are choosing to work, you know, longer, for a lot of those, that's a necessity. They're trying to, when you have two economic downturns in a decade, they're trying to make the numbers work. There are some folks, though, who retire and then come back and, because they want to, are working part-time jobs or working longer. But for most of it, it's a necessity. It's part of the planning that Dan mentioned that they have to do.
When should you start seriously planning for retirement, David Jackson?
Well, you know, the title of this program was going to be 30 Days to Retirement. But
not 30 days.
Yeah, we want to make sure people do understand that you know, you get that first job, it would be helpful to do one of those little retirement calculators that you can do online to get at least a baseline of how much you should be saving of your paycheck into some type of a vehicle. And then I think there's another way to look at it. When you get within about 5 years of retirement, you need to really start getting serious about the numbers, about, you know, what is the number that I'm going to need. But, you know, you can't start too soon to plan for retirement because you are on your own.
How about 30 years before retirement?
Yeah.
Instead of 30 days, 30 years
exactly.
Would be optimal. Why is retirement so difficult to talk about, especially for people who have hit that middle-aged point or that middle point in their career, their mid-career? I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to talk about retirement at all. Why is it so difficult to talk about?
It's confusing. And
yes, it is.
Because you're basically taking what was simple, where you receive a paycheck every month, and now all of a sudden, oh gosh, where's the income going to come from? So converting your retirement nest egg to a annuity or some type of income in retirement is complex, and there are a lot of factors that go into it. And people, you know, there's a lot of people who will give you just kind of a rule of thumb calculation on how much you need, but the number, you hear a lot about, well, what's my number? And it's different for everybody, and you just can't use a simple calculation to figure that.
Right. Numbers aside, how do you know when you have enough money to retire? Numbers aside, what are some of the characteristics of a portfolio or a financial status or a net worth that you have to have in place beyond a number?
If you take how much you're spending now, just get a rough idea, and then sit down with a piece of paper and figure out where that same amount of money would come from. What would you get from Social Security? Tamp it back a bit because no one has a lot of faith in Social Security. Do you have a pension plan? How much do you think roughly you might get from that? The other part then is, do you have savings? Do you have a 401k? Do you have a 403b? Do you have, you know, IRAs saved up? Add those together, take 5% and see what that number is. And see if you can get those two sides to match. That sort of gives you an idea of how close you are.
How do you factor in treasure maps?
That would be a good plan B if plan A is not working.
Okay. I just thought, you know, ye old gold,
yes,
might be a good way to do it.
Yes. Have that hot ticket.
Right. Little Willy Wonka action, you know. Speaking of which, Social Security. If you're 62 or older, should you start Social Security or should you wait? Or does it depend, David Jackson?
It really does depend. And that's something that a person needs to think out thoroughly, because if you're going to retire at 62, you can start collecting Social Security but at a reduced benefit. And if you're going to take a part-time job, there's a cap on how much you can make before you have to start paying some of that benefit back. And you can't make over $14,000 a year before you have to start paying some of the Social Security back. If you wait till 66 or 67, you get about 20% more per month. And if you wait till 70, you get, you know, much more per month. So it really depends on your particular situation.
Is that sort of a vesting situation, like a fully vested Social Security account? Or
kinda.
Is it a little bit different?
It's a little different in that full benefits start at 66 for the average person now who's getting close to retirement. And if they decide to retire at 62, they're going to just get a reduced benefit because they're going to receive the benefit a little bit longer. So,
what about the option, Dan Matthews, of drawing down just part of your Social Security check and drawing other income? Should you take the whole thing or should you just draw down part of it? Or does it also depend, Dan?
It does depend. If you're single, the benefit that you receive, if you do take it at age 62, actuarially speaking, it will be the same benefit as if you take it at age 66. Because it's all based on life expectancy. So for a single person, Social Security is calculating that benefit on your life expectancy. So you'll get less at age 62, more at age 66, but actuarially they're the same. If you're married, you can play this game where if one spouse was the lower earning spouse during their lifetime, you can take that benefit at that spouse's age 62, and then the other spouse can wait, and by waiting even beyond age, full retirement age, which David said was 66, you can get these credits, these 8% credits on your annuity, which 8%'s good. So if you're married, you have more options, and you really need to look at the numbers.
Dan, this is why people don't like talking about retirement. What does
did I just complicate things
what
again?
What does actuarially mean? You're speaking of actuary.
Well,
lingo.
Well, okay. So
not actually, actuarially. Tell us what that means.
That is, you know, there's a pool of money out there that each individual is supposed to have from Social Security. So based on your contributions throughout your lifetime. And because nobody knows when they're going to die, we have to make assumptions. And so Social Security makes assumptions about your life expectancy. And what they're doing is they're saying, okay, you have so much in your pool, we need to make that work over your life expectancy. So that's where actual tables come in, and they use these people, you know, with calculators and really nerdy people like myself that have to go in and make these calculations.
We're talking about what actuaries do. Actuary tables and abacus or abacai, retirement, treasure maps, yeah. Those little metal detector things that you take on the beach. Maybe that's possible. A possible strategy for retirement as well. David Jackson, you're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 KCUR FM, streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm your host, Jabalani LaFall. Our guests are Cash Money Click of Financial Advisors. They're all members of the Financial Planning Association of Greater Kansas City. We have David Jackson of Waddell & Reed, Alex Petrovic, who is not here, but we have Dan Matthews and Sandy Weaver, who sometimes is Alex Petrovic, on the show.
Correct.
Kansas City, what do you wish you would have done ahead of your current retirement? You're in retirement now. And for those on the brink of retiring, what questions do you have for our team of financial advisors? 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also write in your questions, concerns, and comments to centralstandard@kcur.org. Join the conversation on retirement, whether you're about to retire or whether you're already in retirement and need some advice on what you should do with your time and your money. Now, retirement policy expert Teresa Ghilarducci wrote in the New York Times recently that to maintain living standards in old age, we need roughly 20 times our annual income in financial wealth. For instance, if you earned $100,000 at retirement, you need how much, Sandy Weaver?
$2 million.
$2 million. Right. Now, is that $2 million starting your retirement or $2 million through the duration of your retirement?
Starting at retirement. I mean, and those are rough figures, you know, but just 5%, you know,
and this is this is beyond what you would receive for Social Security is what Ghilarducci points out, beyond what you would receive for Social Security.
Well, no. Let's say now that you're living off of a $100,000 paycheck, you know, a month. And so if there were no Social Security at all, then you would need a $2 million investment savings pot of money, and you take out 5% per year. That gives you the same number.
Wow. Most people don't make $100,000 a year.
Yeah.
So she also spoke of a fantasy world of working longer, and a lot of people are doing that. But what are the pros and cons of that, Sandy?
Well, the pros are that a lot of people choose to do something longer after they retire. They find that they like some purpose in life. And so for some people, it's a joy. For other people, it's a have to. But you actually give yourself two big benefits if you decide to do some part-time or full-time work past retirement. Number one is, you know, you are bringing money in that you don't have to pull out of a portfolio. The other thing, though, is that the money that you're leaving in your investments is still growing then. And so you benefit two ways. It's a big deal if you choose to do some part-time work in retirement.
Now, the downside, though, is that people that are over 60, it's tough to find a job or keep a job, you know, because with this economy that we're in, you know, that group over 55, the unemployment rate is really high for them.
816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888 to chime in on our discussion about retirement and retirement options. You can also write in at centralstandard@kcur.org. Sean in Parkville wants to know, are pensions still on the outs if you work at a government job? I think so. Nothing is safe, David Jackson, right?
You know,
it's safer.
It's safer, but I think you will see over the next 10 years, 5 or 10 years, there's going to be pressure on those pension plans as well.
Yeah, and I don't want to set off alarms. They're not out, like, in the terms, they're not going to be there. There are some funding issues, but as of today, I mean, you can still be a participant in a state-run government pension plan. Now, you may have to make some contributions to that, but there's probably a reliable source of income there in retirement. But it's not out. It's not completely out of the
picture.
But
they're the most safest pension you can find if you're talking defined benefit, because other than unions, that's about all there is, because corporations have been pulling out, converting them.
Speaking of corporations pulling out, here's a common question for a lot of people that a lot of people might be facing these days. What if you were forced into retirement by a forced into retirement package, an attrition package, a downsizing? How should you handle your severance? Talk about 30 days from retirement. How should you handle that?
I think if you have a chance to get a lump sum severance, you need to determine whether, if you get choices, determine whether you want to take it all in one tax year, or if you get the choice of splitting it over this year, say, and next year. We just did one of those for a client, and the difference was $6,000. You know, you have a couple things. One is, if you take it in 1 year, your tax bracket's going to go up, so you have more money coming through your tax return at a higher rate, so you're going to lose more to Uncle Sam. The other thing, though, is FICA tax jumps 2% next year. So you're paying low this year, you'll pay 2% more next year. But if you just, you know, work two columns, work it down one way, then work it over a two-year period, you can see how much you can save going A or B.
FICA is going up?
For the employee.
For the employee.
The government's not going to fix that?
It may get extended. They set a precedent now for 2 years that they've reduced it by, you know, 2%. So each year we do that, it makes it harder to go back.
No, yeah. Doesn't it? Yeah.
That doesn't really help the Social Security system.
Other words,
the trust fund.
Other words, invest in flip-flops. I don't know what that means.
Well, while you're looking for the gold on the beach with your metal
detector. Right, invest in flip-flops, go out there, metal detectors, treasure map. It's always an option, folks. 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Join the conversation about retirement and retirement options. Even if you're nervous about it, we have a panel of experts here that can help talk you through it or soothe some of that anxiety. Marion Liberty writes, how does the panel feel about variable annuities? She says she has an agent who is hard selling this to us, and we are very leery. She's done okay with managing the 401k account that they currently have and attempted to just roll the lump sum over into the 401k rather than giving it to an insurance company. Let's talk benefit options such as annuities. What is Marion Liberty concerned about with this annuity?
I would suggest that, you know, if you have the option to take an annuity and you're not an investment expert or you don't plan to hire one, that you seriously take a look at taking the annuity, because the one thing with the annuity is that you're guaranteed never to run out of retirement income, which that buys a lot of peace of mind for some people.
Well, I think her question was, if she had a lump sum, does she invest it into an annuity versus taking the pension?
Same, and my answer would be the same.
Okay.
I mean, you know, if she's not going to hire somebody, if she doesn't have the investment savvy, you know, if she's not investment savvy, she's not going to hire somebody to do that, then you may want to seriously look at that annuity, because, like I said, having fixed income for life buys a lot of peace of mind for some people.
But I would argue that there's a difference between a variable annuity and a fixed annuity.
Right.
A fixed annuity is a lot cheaper.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah.
The difference between fixed and variable.
That fixed annuity, if you get one, say, you know, from a cheap place like a Vanguard or someplace, get the COLA with it, the cost of living adjustment, the inflation rider with it, because your expenses will go up through time. That's a pretty low-cost investment vehicle. And it also then can cover a base set of expenses that you have. You know, the variable annuity can still get you into trouble if you're – that requires investment expertise inside. The expense structures inside those are a lot higher. We find more uses for that lower-cost fixed annuity.
Now, Sandy, she says she's tempted to just roll this lump sum over into the 401k rather than giving it to an insurance company. What do you think about that statement? She's tempted to roll it over. Should she fall into temptation?
Well, if she's talking – I guess I'm not quite clear on that. If she's talking about rolling it forward into the next 401k or rolling it out into an IRA.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that's perhaps what she's talking about.
Okay.
Because she has a lump sum.
Okay, so she could go to an IRA with it, or she could buy an annuity inside that IRA.
Mary, if
she
you
might
want,
do both.
Yeah, Mary, if you want clarification on this, sorry, Sandy, if you want clarification on this, you can write in to centralstandard@kcur.org or call in to 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. And anybody else out there that wants to talk about retirement and retirement planning, we're here with our Cash Money. Click, and you can join the conversation. We got Janice in Topeka. Welcome to Central Standard. Janice?
Hello?
Janice?
Yes, hi.
Maybe that's why you weren't answering me,
right? Your guest Hello, earlier Janice. Mentioned that in a married couple, the lower income earning person at 62 could draw their Social Security, and they would get this 8% credit, and I didn't understand what that meant, and I was curious.
Dan?
Yeah, let me clarify that. The other spouse can delay his or her credit, and by delaying past your full retirement age, you get an additional benefit of 8% per year up to age 70. So that would be a total of 32%. So you add on to your full retirement age benefit, that's 132% of your full retirement age benefit. And then also, by doing so, if that spouse then later – well, the spouse will later die, the surviving spouse would then step up to the 132% benefit. So that surviving spouse then gets more down the road. So that's what I was saying. The one that claims early does not get the 8%. They actually get a reduced benefit by 25%.
But the one who claims early claims on – her work record, and then switches over to his work record when he starts up, right? The higher amount.
The higher amount. Right.
What we usually see.
Gets complicated, but there are some options for a married couple. That's the main thing we want to pass on.
Right. Actuarially speaking, and actually.
And actually.
It is very complicated. One of our listeners, Robert, writes, if you have a long-term care policy that is adequate for nursing home costs, how much can you reduce your retirement number? We were going to get into health care and health benefit expenses a little bit later in the broadcast, but Robert writes in. We might as well address that now for Robert. Long-term care policies?
I don't see where that reduces the need for retirement income at all, frankly. You know, we that's not money coming in unless you need it. So that policy won't give you money, you know, until something triggers that. What we do when we look at how much long-term care insurance to buy, we do run a retirement projection first, and then we say, well, how much of the long-term care can we afford to self-fund where we don't have to buy it?
So that doesn't necessarily reduce your number.
Right.
Well, actually, you look at it the other way, and your number may get a whole lot bigger if long-term care issues come into play. So, I mean, from one standpoint, he is right. It does affect the number potentially. But I think it's really admirable for an older person to consider a long-term care policy because as people live longer, the likelihood of them needing some type of long-term care gets really high.
And let's talk about benefit options. We were talking about annuities earlier. What are the different types of annuities, just to recap here? Variable and fixed, and what other types of annuities are there?
When you have the option to take a pension in an annuity, you can take it over your own life, which is called a single life annuity, over a joint life, which is called a joint and survivor annuity. You can also choose a term certain annuity, which would pay out over a certain number of years plus, and then for you and your beneficiary, and then but it would also pay out over your life. And then there's the non-annuitized option, which is the lump sum option, or a blend of the two in a few rare cases.
So this is why this is so important. I've run into this situation before. Let's just say a husband has a pension option or annuity option of, say, $3,000 a month as a single life. And he's talking to his wife and says, well, I can put you on there with a spousal benefit and we'll get $2,000 a month. But if we just do me, it's $3,000 a month. And so I've seen this happen before where the husband convinces the wife to do the $3,000 a month option. He passes away, and now the spouse is left with nothing.
Our guests are Cash Money Click of Financial Advisors. They're all members of the Financial Planning Association of Greater Kansas City, David Jackson of Waddell & Reed, Sandy Weaver of Financial Security Advisors, and Dan Matthew of Step and Rothwell. We're discussing retirement. We're going to take a quick break. When we return, more on retirement options in the brave new world of work and life balance. Meanwhile, Kansas City, What do you wish you would have done ahead of your current retirement? And for those of you on the brink of retirement, what questions do you have for our team of financial advisors? 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also write in at centralstandard@kcur.org. And welcome back to Central Standard. I'm your host, Jabalani LaFall. It was legendary basketball coach Abe Lemons who once quipped that the trouble with retirement is that you never get a day off. We're here with the financial planning, and that definitely applies. Old Abe Lemons was right when he was talking about retirement. For where retirement is concerned, it's certainly true that there's more work to do even after you've stopped working. Our Cash Money Click of Financial Advisors is here once again to talk about retirement. We've got David Jackson of Waddell & Reed, Sandy Weaver of Financial Security Advisors, and Dan Matthews of Step and Rothwell. They're all members of the Financial Planning Association of Greater Kansas City, and we're discussing retirement. Kansas City, what do you wish you would have done ahead of your current retirement? And for those on the brink of retiring, what questions do you have for our team of personal finance experts? 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also write in at centralstandard@kcur.org. Before we get back into the discussion, Sergio writes in, I'm 27, and I'm kind of broke at the moment. I want to change that ASAP. I would love to have some financial help to plan for my future, but I feel like at the moment, I really don't have much to invest and grow. Should I try myself to get some more money looking for financial advice, or should I start doing that now? I would say, Sergio, you should slow down when you type. But Sergio is a long listener for us. He's 27, and he's Briz Oak. So talk about that. Retirement is not even remotely in his mind right now.
It's really not. But Sergio needs to at least get in the habit of paying himself first. That's the first thing he needs to do. And just make saving the habit, build up his savings, and then start worrying about retirement. But you got to build up your savings first so that you don't have to tap into your retirement every time something goes wrong, like the car breaks down or whatever.
Pay yourself first, Sergio. You heard it from our team of financial advisors. Rebecca in Olathe, welcome to Central Standard.
Hey, thanks. My question is that I'm wondering, at about age 40, is life insurance something I should purchase as a form of savings?
Is life insurance a form of savings? Is it... Can you factor it into your number?
I would say no. At age 40, if you need life insurance, I would look to buy term insurance just because you're buying the pure insurance and not treating it like an investment, like whole life is an investment type of insurance. But you just want to – life insurance is for replacing income if you die. That's what you want to protect. And that's why you should only buy insurance to protect that.
So you can't go into a car dealership and say, I got this life insurance policy. It's $1 million. What's up? Can I?
Not a term policy. No.
Yeah. But can't do that. Can't do that. Rebecca, your question is answered. Jake in South Kansas City. Welcome to Central Standard, Jake.
Pleasant good morning, folks. Couple of questions. Is it possible married couples can both draw their Social Security?
Right.
Okay, I've got a follow-up.
Is that a question?
Yes, they can, that, right?
Yeah, if they both have income, and even if they don't both have income, if one has income, yeah, they're both getting credits for Social Security, yes.
What's your next
question? Okay, they have credits, but may you both draw on your account, you know, at 65 or 62 or whatever.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, another question, if somebody starts drawing at 62, is the option still there to pay them back at 65 or 66 and draw full benefits?
They did away with that.
No.
Sorry, Jake.
Okay. Well, I guess then
sorry,
advice
Jake.
Would be to marry up to any of these young people.
Yes.
Are you calling in to ask Jake whether or not you should get divorced?
Didn't he call at a previous show?
If both members of the marriage weren't able to draw Social Security, and I'm sure there are certain instances where it makes financial sense to get divorced, you know, just the way tax laws are written and benefits. And
as a divorcee, Jake, it didn't make financial sense to me. I'm not going to lie to you.
I think Jake wants to hit on Sandy, though. That's what I'm hearing.
It made no financial sense to me. None.
You'd have to talk to your attorney about that one. I don't know. Okay.
Well, Jake, thank you very much for contributing to the conversation. We got Ted in Indy. Welcome to Central Standard.
Thank you. I've got a question whether or not I should be concerned about a variable annuity contract that I purchased 5 years ago. I put about $55,000 lump sum into it. It has an annual percentage increase of 6%, so that's gone up every year. 6% has been added to the amount of my initial investment. However, the total value of the annuity contract has never equaled the amount of money that I've invested. And that initial money was invested in a growth and income portfolio. And my question is, should I be concerned about the real value of my the investment value of my contract?
That's a very good question. And this is really the theme of the hour. Should he be concerned about the investment value of his contract?
Yeah, he should be, and he should look at the contract and get into the details of it and find out exactly what he's bought and what are the fees associated with the contract and then what it promises to pay out at a certain age. Those are all the things that you need to find out before you buy the contract, but now that he's into it, he really needs to get in and find out what his options are.
Yeah, variable annuities can be very, very complicated. So the 6% that he's talking about, it's a credit towards taking income off of it. It's not actually real money, but it is, you know, and it creates an income base that you start withdrawing from. So a lot of annuities get sold and people really don't understand what they've bought because there are so many different details that go in with them. So it's kind of a hard question to answer on the air without actually seeing the contract.
I'm sensing a pattern and a trend here. Should we encourage people to start to take actuary workshops?
I'll be leading them.
Or get out their actuary tables and Ouija boards, actuary Ouija boards. That might be a good thing.
I mean, annuities can be really, really complicated. But here's one neat thing that they're offering these days. It's called a lifetime income guarantee, where you don't actually have to annuitize the contract or give up control of your principal, but it guarantees that it'll continue to pay you out as long as you live. So, like I said, they're very complicated, a lot of different features that come with them that you have choices on, and so you just really have to be careful when you purchase them, make sure it makes sense for your situation.
We've looked at those, too. The type that he's looking at that he has tends to have high internal expenses. On the other hand, he may have come out smelling like a rose if he bought that thing before 2008. Because he's got that 6% clucking up, and that would have meant that he didn't, you know, suffer with everybody else in 2008.
But maybe perhaps up to 2008, not smelling so good.
Yes, yeah. But still, it is complicated. You might just keep it simple and go with a fixed.
RJ and KCK, welcome to Central Standard.
Hi.
Hello.
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 My question was, what's the... I'm thinking about retiring at 59, and I'm thinking about what is there on benefits for me to do that? Is that bad, or is that?
Well, I guess the question is, RJ, do you feel like you can retire at 59? Do you feel like you can meet all of your wants and needs at 59?
Well, the way the economy can indebt me and everything else, and the situation that I'm in and everything else, I found out something about myself since I haven't had a job in over 3 years now almost.
Wow.
And I have seen things that I, you know, I'm going to survive and all that there, you know, through a lot of people around me who are actually helping me. And I'm really thankful for that. That's really weird, too. You think 3 years and he's still surviving? And I've lost my home and everything else in the process of all of that. But I still said, my brother put this on my mind and said, you should go ahead on retire, man, because, you know, you can go ahead on retire. Get that started, and then if you find something full time out there that you can get, take it. But everything I try to go get, it seems like if I don't, one thing is I know I better do is learn how to speak Spanish.
Wow. I'm glad you've gotten to a place, RJ, where you can laugh at it, man. It's very tough out there. David Jackson, talk about this man's situation. 59, that's very young.
It actually is.
But that's the situation that a lot of people are in. A lot of people are in their mid to late 50s. You talk about 30 days out from retirement. Mm-hmm. They're roughly 10 years out from retirement. The job market has changed.
Exactly.
A lot of them aren't going to have a shot again, period.
And that's the sad thing is those people in that age 50 group in their 50s are having a hard time getting back into the workforce. It's tougher for them than anybody else out there. So he's dealing with a couple of issues. Number one, retiring that young, he's got to make his money last that much longer in retirement. Number two, he can't get Social Security until he's age 62 at the earliest. So if he's not working, what's he going to do for income for the next 3 years? If he hasn't put away, you know, a chunk of money already, and if he doesn't have a pension, I'm not sure what he's going to do.
Can't retire at 59, RJ. Sorry. Ramon in North KC. Welcome to Central Standard.
Thank you. My question is a simple one. I'm looking at retiring in approximately 2 years.
Okay.
My wife would be 57 when I retire.
Okay.
Would she be entitled to any Social Security benefits?
No.
No.
Not until age 62.
62 is the youngest you can draw down.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness. And she's unemployed, so she won't be employed.
Wow. Wow. How old are you?
I'm 64.
64. Okay.
But I have an excellent job, and probably I'm going to stick it out for another 2 years.
Okay.
And hoping that things will get better, or I have to work until 70. But I don't want to work until I die.
Yeah. No one wants to do that.
Well, you know, retirement planning would be so simple if we knew what our exit date was, when we were going to expire. But yeah. We don't. So, you know, you have to plan for, you know, possibly a long life.
And that's an interesting thing that you bring up. Thank you, Ramon, for calling in. Should you be pre-budgeting for retirement to the age where you'd ideally like to live? Like, how does that work?
Yeah, that's tricky there. You know, the life expectancy now is about 85, 86, or 87, somewhere in that range, varies between men and women. But, you know, what if you live to be 90 or 95, you know, and you run out of money? So, you know, usually when we're doing these calculations, if somebody says, well, you know, I think I'll live to 85, we run the numbers maybe to age 90 or 95 to put some, you know, flux in there. But you just don't know.
From age about 55 through 100. I'm going to be frozen. I'm going to come out. They're going to call me Iceman. You know what I mean? So, like, that's my retirement.
Have 2 years of party at the end.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Come out.
Won't need quite as much money then.
Come out cold as ice. You know what I mean?
A Coke will cost $10. Yeah. And you could come out of.
They could pour a Coke on me. I'm already ice. You know what I mean? That's my plan. Cryogenetics.
Deborah, we need to get you another plan.
This retirement plan is a lot of work.
That's my initial plan. And then the treasure map also. I have a portfolio.
Yeah, you do have a plan
of,
at least.
Of fail safe.
We do talk about planning, so at least you have a plan.
It's called the Fantasy 500. You heard of the S&P 500?
Yes.
It's a bunch of fantasy stocks.
I see that.
Bonds. Speaking of stocks and bonds, Deborah in Independence writes, she's looking at retiring next year at the age of 64. What percentage of bonds versus stocks would you recommend in a portfolio? Very straightforward question, but bonds versus stocks?
The time horizon for her investments is really a lot longer than she's thinking because, you know, back to what David just mentioned, her life expectancy number is probably 89. And we usually add 10 years because life expectancy is a mean. It's an average statistic. That means half of the people are living longer. So if you take 99 less 64, she's got 35 years. And so we would recommend 50 to 75% in higher growth assets such as stocks.
All right. You heard it from Sandy, Deborah in Independence. Now, let's talk about taking cash out of hard assets such as property. Do you advise people to do that, reverse mortgages and other post-retirement refinancing of hard assets, things like that, Dan Matthews?
I don't like to recommend those things, but unfortunately sometimes you don't have any other options. So when you get to that point where you don't have any liquid assets on your balance sheet, meaning you don't have any retirement plan accounts, you don't have any savings, then – for most people, the only thing that's left is the house, and you have to start liquidating it. But it's expensive, and there's, you know, maybe the other option is to, if you're willing to do so, sell the house versus a reverse mortgage and then just, you know, get the equity out that way and then start all over with a different type of housing arrangement.
You know what I'm going to say, right? If you
freeze, I do not know what you're going to say.
If you freeze yourself, what happens when the ice melts? It gets what? Liquid.
They hate it. Yes. Liquid.
There you go.
Liquidated. That's right. So you get liquid immediately. I love that plan. Dave in Springfield. Welcome to Central Standard. Dave in Springfield?
Spring Hill. Yes.
Spring Hill.
Thank you. Yes, thank you for taking my call.
Okay.
I've retired, and my wife's due to retire in like 3 years. And on our income tax, when I fill out income tax, we've got some rental properties that has about $2,000 a month income. And I'm thinking of taking my Social Security when I turn 62. If I have that income listed as my income, then I would have to pay back some of the money to Social Security, as I understand it. So is it simply I indicate that it's my wife's income for the rental properties, and then I would not have to do that?
No, what they're up here asking the lie, right?
What they're talking about is earned income. So you don't treat rental income as earned income. It's income from a job that you're stuck with that stipulation of not making over the $14,000 a year. So the rental income would be okay.
So rental income doesn't apply to that.
Right.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Dave, for calling in and being part of the conversation. You are listening to Central Standard on 89.3 FM. KCUR, all the call letters, streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm your host, Javelani LaFall. We have David Jackson of Waddell & Reed, Sandy Weaver of Financial Security Advisors, and Dan Matthews of Step and Rothwell. They're all members of the Financial Planning Association of Greater Kansas City and also comprise our Cash Money clique of financial advisors. We're discussing retirement today. Kansas City, what do you wish you would have done ahead of your current retirement? And for those on the brink of retirement, what questions do you have for our team of financial advisors? 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also write into centralstandard at kcur.org. What's the number one question, Sandy Weaver, you guys receive or address when you first start talking to clients about retirement?
Probably the number one question is they have a defined benefit pension plan, which means they're going to get a check every month, and they want to know how on earth should we take it, because there's like 10 or 15 options. And Dan and David have both, you know, addressed some of those issues first. But, you know, you need to sort of sit down and figure out of these, you know, 15 options, which of these can I take, you know, and not leave a spouse destitute if I die? And then let's say that narrows it down to 10. Which of those should you take?
Defined benefit pension options. What are maybe five of them? You said there are about 15 of them.
Yeah, there are.
Rattle some off real quick. The most common ones.
Single life annuity. Then there's joint with 50% to a survivor if I die. There's joint with 100% of the paycheck going to a survivor if I die. You know, so those are the three common.
And John, I'll just add, when somebody is faced with this question about which annuity to take, people should understand that this is irrevocable. So once they check the box, sign the paperwork, and send it in, it's done. All right. They can't go back and redo their annuity options. So it's very important that you understand all of your options and make sure that you're picking one that makes the most sense for you.
So that's something that is set in stone, in other words.
That's exactly right. Much like the Social Security election, too. When you choose a Social Security benefit, irrevocable. Yep.
Talk about the basic nature of Social Security benefits.
Well, there's basically the nature of them is just to keep people above the poverty line. They're supposed to provide just a basic benefit for retirees because, you know, the government set up the Social Security system after the Great Depression to help people. It's an entitlement. So it's basically supposed to provide you with your basic necessities. It's not supposed to afford you a life of leisure.
I guess my question is, what are the Social Security benefit options that you can check and that are irrevocable?
Well, it's basically when you start taking it. So age 62 through age 70, guess, you don't want to. And then also, are you then going to take your benefit based on your own earnings record? Or if you're married, you have the option to take a benefit on your spouse's record, which there's some interplay there that you can plan around it and obviously and maybe come out to your benefit by doing so.
Marilyn and Olathe probably has a similar question along these lines.
It is.
Oh.
It is very much so, the irrevocability of Social Security. I'm a qualified for divorced widow benefit. And when I was 62, I had not intended to file that early, but I got cancer. And at that point, your decisions start to change.
Right.
And I filed mistakenly, and this is what I wanted to warn others. They said my benefit at 66, my own work record, would be about the same as my former husband's at 100% when I was 66. They'd be about the same. That was what I understood. But I was under radiation treatment at the time. I made the mistake of filing at 62 for 70% of his instead of my own, because as it turns out, there's about a $200 a month difference. So at 66, I would be at 100% of my benefit, only getting a couple hundred less than I currently get for 70% of his. So his 100% obviously would have been a lot higher. So you have to be really careful, and they won't listen to you. They don't want it. They don't care. You make a mistake with Social Security, you're stuck with it.
Wow, that's why they call it the third rail of politics a lot. Now, should you ideally just wait until the maximum time to draw down Social Security if you can?
If you can, it's generally the better option.
But like she said, her situation changed. She didn't have a whole lot of options there, so she just had to make the smart decision as far as which option to take. And you don't get a whole lot of help on which makes most sense to you. You have to figure it out on your own a lot of times.
Now, our last caller, Marilyn, had a very compelling and sad story. She contracted cancer. How do you go about paying, or better yet, planning for those unexpected health care expenses, which will likely, as in her case, end up being one of the biggest expenses in retirement? What do you do?
Well, I don't know if you can plan for it. I mean, we talked a little bit about long-term care insurance as being, you know, one option that's out there. Saving and investing, you know, you're just going to have to make smart choices with your money.
The other option, though, if you're thinking about retiring before Medicare starts 65, is you really need to sit down and think about how you're going to keep medical coverage.
Oh, that's
you know,
big.
Are you going to do COBRA? Are you going to go out and get your own policy, state pool, you know, all those options.
Elaine in Overland Park, welcome to Central Standard.
Hello.
Hello to you.
Are you ready for the question?
I'm ready.
Thank you.
Born ready.
My question is, I am 42. My husband and I have been saving aggressively since our first job when we were 23. We're self-employed now. But when we first started, kind of there was a rule of thumb of your investments should double or would double about every 10 years. Our experience in the last 12 years of being self-employed and having a pretty big nest egg because of my husband's started a company about 10 years ago, we've had a lot to invest. It has certainly not doubled in the last 10 years. And I wonder, is there a new rule of thumb as we're planning forward that's a little more realistic than your nest egg should double every 10 years?
Well, let me tell you this, Elaine. When our Cash Money click of financial advisors are snickering in the studio when we're talking about growth, you know something is afoot here. David Jackson, what's the new rule of thumb here?
Well, I don't know if there's a new rule of thumb, but the past decade has been tough.
Yeah.
I mean, it has been really tough.
Unprecedented, really.
Yes.
Unprecedented, really.
Yeah.
So how should she plan then? Because obviously she did
She was doing everything right.
Her and her husband did all the right things and expected that income
to double. Well, the good thing in her case is that she's only 42, so she doesn't need her money right now.
Right.
The other thing is there's a basic concept called a reversion to the mean, which means if the average is something and then we're running a lot below the average for an extended period of time, eventually things are going to start going back over the average to get back to the average.
Reverting to the mean, man, that sounds like circle talk.
It kind of is. It kind of is.
So you're saying
I'm telling her to hang in there. Is what I'm trying to tell her.
At some point, things could get so bad that that's the new benchmark.
No, I'm saying eventually things get back to normal. So the past decade has been subnormal. It's been a lot less than normal. Maybe over the next 10 to 15 years, we could be looking for things to go back to a little bit above normal to get back to.
But when the caller's, you know, in her mid-40s and they're accumulating assets, so actually a bad stock market kind of plays to their favor a little
bit
because they are buying more shares at lower prices.
Buying low.
Selling high. I mean,
I've heard that before.
Yeah.
Hopefully selling high.
The other thing I would encourage is for them to save smarts and say are self-employed. They should be using IRAs, Roth IRAs first. But then also cheap pensions that you can set up if you have your own business or simple pension plans. So you want to save, you know, in ways that you get the most bang for the buck.
Beth writes, having lost her job several years ago, the same morning she closed on her house, her mother died. She now has a job with half the income. Her next birthday, she's going to be 60. So the reports that come every year show that based on averaging, the more, the less my Social Security payment will benefit me. Based on averaging, the more she works, the less Social Security will benefit her. Is that true?
Because Social Security is an average of your 35 years of salary. So
right.
That may be happening for her.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Shirley in Raytown, welcome to Central Standard.
Hi. I have two questions for you. The first one is, I'm disabled and I'm collecting disability. And when I reach 66 for Social Security age, will my disability check stay the same? And would that be my Social Security, or does it go up?
Okay, that's the first question.
Second question is, you said that when they figure out your Social Security, they estimate about how long you're going to live and about how much you'll get a month. What happens if you live past their estimate? Do they just cut off your Social Security, or does it continue as long as you're living?
Thank you very much. That's a very good question. What happens if you live past the estimate? The government says...
You win the game.
Yeah, you're coming out ahead.
You do.
You pass
yeah.
go. Huh?
Yeah.
You get the boardwalk.
That's exactly
out.
Right.
They start paying
yeah.
you in Monopoly
you
money.
You win every year after that.
Is that
you
what
beat
happens?
The actuarial table.
Yeah. Yes.
Actually, you do.
You flip the game over. Wow. You know, Japan has a huge aging population, and our own retiring baby boomers are starting to put a major strain on our system. How much should those on the brink of retirement be worried about macroeconomic factors such as inflation or deflation or unforeseen events as we close out here? David.
Well, I don't know how much you want to worry about it because there's nothing you can do about
right.
it. But it is a reality. And, you know, you got to worry about your longevity as well. You know, how long are you going to be around?
And that's the main question going into retirement and puts us in a circle in that sense. Our guests are Cash Money, Click of Financial Advisors, David Jackson of Waddell & Reed, whose voice you just heard, Sandy Weaver of Financial Security Advisors, and Dan Matthews of Step & Rothwell. We were discussing retirement and how we all got our work cut out for us, it seems. Thank you for coming today.
Great
Thank
to be
you.
Here.
And for more information on this show and other shows regarding the Cash Money Click, go to kcur.org. And tune in tomorrow as we look at a new initiative from the city's Human Relations Department. The slogan is Discrimination, Report It, Don't Ignore It. Our show is produced by Andrea Salenzi. Up to Date is next with an exclusive interview with Congressman Kevin Yoder. He'll be explaining why he swam naked in the Sea of Galilee. All right. I'm Jabalani LaFall, and this is Central Standard. Enjoy your day.